Great to have you with us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. The Green Bay Packers had a fairly successful 2024 season, I think anyway, but like all teams, plenty of room for improvement. And the easiest way to improve an NFL team is through the draft. And our first guest today, Pete Doherty, is going to talk about the draft. Pete's a Packers columnist for the Green Bay Press Gazette and USA Today Network Wisconsin. He's covered the Packers since 1993, and he attended the NFL draft over the weekend right outside Lambeau Field. And he'll be with us up until about 11:45 today. And we want to hear from you. How did you feel about the Packers draft? Do you think the moves made to improve the team? And if you attended the draft, I'd really like to hear from you. What was that experience like? Did the city rise to the occasion? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Pete Doherty, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me, Larry.
Did you survive? How'd you survive the draft this year? I mean, it was in your own backyard compared to every other year.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I thought it was going to overwhelm the city, but it really didn't. You know, the daily life stuff was away from the stadium. There was the traffic here. There were no issues with anything like that. And the actual covering the draft, if you cover the team and you cover the draft, it was no different than any other draft. They have a media auditorium at their facilities over there at Lambeau. And that's where, if you're in the media, that's where you spend the draft, because they put the draft up on a TV screen and they bring down the GM, a couple of scouts, the head coach over the 3 days of the draft to talk about the picks. So that part of it wasn't any different. And getting to and from the stadium, I thought it was going to be a nightmare.
Yeah,
and it was really no different than a game day. In fact, it was probably even not quite as crowded as a game day. And game days are fine over there. They've got it down to a science. So overall, it just it was not that much different for me. And it sounds like it was a really good experience for a lot of people there. I had people staying in my neighborhood. I was walking my dog and bumped into people and just asked them what it was like over there. And it sounded like it was really well organized, and people had a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think they did. I heard an account that the all the folks who were trying to sell parking were having a problem because people were finding on-street parking, which was amazing to at least the people I talked to.
Yeah, they have that. That's available for games, too. But you could see as you were driving in the neighborhoods there, as I got close to the stadium, you could see where they'd crossed out the prices, you know, and they were dropping as the day was going on, especially on Friday and Saturday.
Oh, well, I watched it on TV a little more than I normally do, just because it was in Green Bay, and I sort of wanted to see how it looked, and then the response from the television commentators, I was interested in that, and it was all very positive. Very positive.
Yeah, I think, you know, I would have thought this was going to be just a one-time thing. I wouldn't be surprised if I have no idea. There's probably going to end up being a rotation for draft cities, you know, kind of like there is for Super Bowls. I wonder if that's how it's going to go. And if there is, I got to think Green Bay would be on the rotation if it wants to be. It just sounds like overall it was a really good experience for most people. I'm sure there were hitches here and there, but everything I've seen is that it was, you know, I've seen some quotes from people who attended the Detroit draft last year, and they thought this one was more fun, was better, a little better organized.
Yeah, I think it's in Pittsburgh next year. Somebody was letting me know. So, well, let's talk about the Packers, what they actually did over the weekend, and maybe go back a bit. In your mind, the team's biggest needs heading into the draft?
So I thought their biggest needs were, you know, pass rusher anywhere on the D-line and defensive tackle overall. But definitely edge rusher too. I thought those were there was the biggest that was the biggest need, but really close, like almost indistinguishable after that was cornerback and receiver. I did think that they would end up, I was pretty sure they'd end up drafting either a defensive lineman or defensive tackle or defensive end on the first 2 days. And so that was a surprise they didn't. But, Brian Gutekunst has come up in this system, especially, working for Ted Thompson, where you don't force something that's not there and you don't make bad trades to try to get something you need. And you go by your board, and they did need receiver too, and they've changed, their approach a little bit. I mean, I think they theoretically, if they pick two good players, they were high picks, first and third round, they should be a more dangerous, dynamic, offensive team this year, and they play in a division with a lot of good offense and a lot of offensive talent. So, I'm sure part of what they thought was they just, especially with how their passing offense kind of collapsed those last 3 weeks of the season. I'm sure part of their thinking is they needed to get more dynamic on offense to get more help for Jordan Love. And so they drafted to do that. Now, whether they accomplish it will depend on whether these guys turn out to be good. And, we don't know that till they start playing games.
Yeah. Well, you've got Matthew Golden, I think, in the first round. And then the third rounder was Savion Williams, I think, from TCU.
Yep. With Golden's fast. He ran 4.29, which anything under 4.3 is blazing fast. And I would think he would help them right away, if for no other reason than he can stretch defenses. And you got a shade of safety his way for the deep route stuff. But they also really liked how well he caught the ball. They thought he had as good a hands, maybe the best hands of anybody in this draft. And anybody following the Packers knows that last season that they had some pretty serious drop problems. So, he should help them at a decent amount right away. 50 catches, 60 catches for a rookie is a pretty solid season. And Williams will be interesting because he's raw as far as a route runner and all that. But he was a guy that TCU just they tried to get him the ball. They played him at Wildcat quarterback some. They lined him up in the backfield. They threw bubble screens to him. They just wanted the ball in his hands. He's a huge receiver, 6'3" and a half and like 222. That's a very big receiver. And he's good with the ball in his hands. At least he was in college. Matt LaFleur made it sound like he wants to, he's going to, they're going to design some ways to get the ball in this guy's hands. So even though he's not, he's an unsophisticated route runner, there's still ways to get help from him. The Packers like to do jet sweep stuff and fake jet sweeps, so I suspect we'll see him in that role some. And I don't know. I think this offense is going to look a little different than I would have guessed. Even a week ago with this, it'll probably look a little different than I was thinking it would.
Yeah, I agree. I would think Jordan Love had a big smile on his face.
Yeah, it's funny. Ron Wolf always said at the end of Brett Favre's career, when after Wolf retired actually in 2000, he always said he'd wished he'd done a little more to give Favre more weapons. And he said that enough. I'm sure he said that with his staff. I'm sure he said it to Ted Thompson, and Brian Gutekunst was around all during that time, and I'm sure he heard that too. So I suspect that that message hit home with him too, because Gutekunst hit receiver heavy a couple of years ago. And a year ago at this time, it looked like those guys were on the rise, and a couple of them, leveled off last season, and so they're reloading again. And I'll be interested to see. They were, I think, seventh or eighth in the league in scoring last season, and I'll be curious to see if they pop into the top five this year.
Yeah, it was kind of fun. I was watching on television when Mark Murphy got to the dais, and it was his first time in his life in his position with the Packers that they were able to pick the receiver in the first round. It was pretty cool. Somebody else said there was just a huge roar when he made the pick. You couldn't quite hear it as much on television.
Yeah, It's always, fans and people who watch the game a lot, they always love seeing offensive skill players drafted because that stuff is exciting. Now, the Packers have had a lot of good receivers who weren't picked in the first round, who, if you reheld those drafts, 4 years later, they would have gotten picked in the first round. Guys like Jordy Nelson and Greg Jennings and Davante Adams. So they've been really successful picking guys in the second round, receivers in the second round and even later. But you're still your odds. Odds of missing on a pick are pretty high, even in the first round. I mean, more guys are average or barely above or below average than they are really good. But your odds are still better to hit on a really good player the higher you pick them. And so I'll be really curious to see how Matthew Golden looks and if he's ready to play from day one.
Yeah, and I think also, didn't we get a big offensive lineman too?
Yeah, Anthony Belton from North Carolina State, 330 something, 335, I think. 6'6" and a half, something like that. I mean, that is a huge man. And Brian Gutekunst says he says over and over again, football is a big man's game. And they don't strictly do this, but they generally like to pick guys who, no matter what their position, the guy is big for players at his position. Golden is kind of an exception. He's definitely not a big receiver, but he had the distinguishing trait of the great speed. But they had, anybody who watched that Philadelphia game could see how the Packers got kind of overwhelmed on both lines. And Philadelphia did it to everybody, overwhelmed on both sides of the line of scrimmage. And it is a big man's game. I'm sure this isn't the last that we'll see of Gutekunst drafting, behemoth guys like that.
Pete Doherty, our guest today, Packers columnist for the Green Bay Press Gazette and USA Today Network, Wisconsin. It's great to have him with us today as we talk about the Packers and the draft. I hope you'll join in with your own thoughts and comments. If you attended the draft, I'd love to hear from you. Or if you have a question about the Packers and maybe the Packers picks, give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Thanks so much for joining us today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. We're taking a look at the NFL draft today. Just to let you know, coming up at 11:45, we talked with Janelle Dethridge, a former professional and collegiate runner at the UW-Madison. We'll talk with her about how to train for a marathon. And then at 12:30, John Martin, one of our weather guys, is back to talk about the kind of weather we'll see over the second half of spring here in Wisconsin. But right now, Pete Doherty's with us. Pete, as I mentioned, Packers columnist for the Green Bay Press Gazette and USA Today Network, Wisconsin. Give a call. Were you at the draft or do you have a question about the Packers? Give a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. Well, let's see. Were there any picks that left you scratching your head?
At first, when they picked Savion Williams in the third round, I was kind of shocked, because, like I said, I expected them to, get somebody on the defensive line in the first three rounds. I would have bet a fair amount on that, but it's just a good reminder, and I should be chastising myself for doing that. You just never know what's going to happen in the draft. And, they're not going to, Gutekunst isn't going to force picks or make what he thinks is a bad trade to fill a spot. So he's going to go by the board. And the needs were big enough at all those positions where, the four that we talked about earlier, where if they went receiver twice, I shouldn't have been as surprised as I was. But I have to admit, I was surprised. There were no picks where I was like, what are they doing here? This is ridiculous. But that's pretty rare because I've learned enough doing this 30 some years that to make any judgments about the draft and about a specific pick just based on, whether you think the guy's going to be good or not is fruitless because, even they don't know, and they spend, a year preparing for each draft, and they know a lot about these guys, and even with the teams, they don't know if they're going to be good. I mean, how many times do you see where a fourth round pick is better than a first round pick? It happens often enough. So I've learned to just not make too many judgments about who they pick, and just wait and see how it plays out, because you just don't know, and people who do that for a living don't even know.
Yeah, you can think about some of the great quarterbacks, really good ones that did not go in the first round. Maybe the best quarterback ever, or certainly one of the best ever. And last
Yeah,
year,
he was pick. Well, he's a six. He was pick 199, I think, and Bart Starr was pick 200 of his draft, or vice versa. They were one pick apart, basically. And yeah, you don't know, and the teams don't know. And it's still, for all the information they have, and they have a ton of it, and for all the background research they do, and they do a ton of that, there's still, very much, it's as much art as science in picking these guys.
yeah. Tim in Madison emailed. He was watching on TV the opening of the draft process and thought it sounded like the commissioner was being booed. Was that true? And if so, why would the crowd boo him?
Oh yeah, he got booed mercilessly, but that's the case every year, and
Yeah.
he does just what he did there, where he encourages it and tells people to bring it on. No, that was not a unique to Green Bay thing. Basically, a big part of Roger Goodell's job, and one of the reasons he makes $50 million a year, whatever it is he stands out front and takes all the abuse for the owners, so they don't take it. That's part of his job. Is, they call the NFL the shield, the NFL logo. Well, Roger Goodell is the owner's shield, and so that's part of his job.
I thought it was interesting. There was a great story about a guy who wasn't going to be picked in the early rounds, who went to the green room anyway. He made his way to Green Bay, and he actually did get picked. Blanking on his name suddenly.
Yeah, Sorrell, the linebacker. He was the first edge rusher that they took, and he was their fourth round pick. And it's funny, they didn't even the Packers, the GM, the coach, everybody in their draft room, they didn't know he was there. He was not on the list of people who were supposed to be there. I mean, he wasn't, even in consideration for anybody for a first round pick. He came in because he thought he might get picked in the third round, and he just wanted to be there, and so he came in and he decided to stay over till Friday. And that's why Goodell actually announced his when he was picked, he never announces picks on the third day of the draft, but because this guy stuck around, he made a point of going out there and announcing the pick. And I was just at the gym yesterday and was talking with an acquaintance, and he was saying, how cool he thought that was, that the guy was there and the fan re I mean, this guy has just he's become a fan favorite without even stepping on the field or without even doing anything. And people, I guarantee you, Packers fans had not heard of this guy until that day. So he's off to a good start as far as being a really popular guy in Wisconsin.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. And then I guess in the little press conference afterwards, he kind of broke down talking about his mom and his dad. And I mean, you couldn't have asked for better theater than that whole situation.
Yeah, because usually when they always when they do these draft picks, they they're not in Green Bay. So what they do is, after the pick, within about 15 or 20 minutes, they get the guy on a phone call or a Zoom call for the media who are sitting in the auditorium. So that's the first exposure. And even with Golden, he was over, he was one of the guys who came for the first round. They did not bring him over. And I think it was by NFL rules that those guys coming in could not go over to the Packers facility. So they didn't even bring him in, but they were able to, I guess because it was after the first day, they were able to with this guy, but he came in, he had probably five or six or seven family members. So that's, it's just, you just never see that where they're there at a press conference and they were sitting in the front row. And yeah, when he was asked to identify him, he just he had a little trouble even, you know, saying their names. It took probably 4 or 5 minutes for him to go through everybody. It just tells you how, you know, what this means to these people who, you know, they spend a lot of their lives, you know, dreaming of this and preparing for it. And you know, when it actually hits, even if they don't expect it, it really hits them hard.
Well, he was an edge rusher, right? Out of Texas.
Yeah, out of Texas. Yeah, and he it sounds like he's a guy who everybody at the program really liked having around. Just a good guy to have in your locker room. And you know, obviously the most important thing is whether you can play or not. But loving football and being a good teammate and all that, it can matter in evaluations, and it sounds like it mattered in his.
Yeah, it sure does. What was, somebody has a question here about the economic impact for Green Bay. It's got to be pretty good, I would think.
I would think so too. There was a lot of people from out of town. There, my next door neighbor, you know, has a flat in his back and had some people in from Minnesota staying there. I trying to remember the numbers. I think the estimates were that it was going to be about 90 million extra economic activity for the state as a whole and about 20 million for Green Bay. You know, they're doing surveys, and the results of that won't be out for a couple months, so we won't know the real, or you know, have a better estimate until those come out. I think they, you know, the attendance was really high. Now, the way they keep attendance keeps this murky, because if you walked into the, you know, it's free to get in, so if you walked in to the campus and then you left and then you came back a little later, you're counted twice. And if you came one, even just once all 3 days, you're counted three times. So that 600,000 number is deceiving, but it's still pretty high. And so there had to have been a, you know, a pretty high number of unique visitors, which, you know, and you know, a lot of them had to come from at least outside of Green Bay. I think a lot of people from around Wisconsin probably made day trips out of it. But we'll find out the real numbers. But considering they were thinking more along the lines of, you know, 300,000 or so, I wonder if those economic impact numbers might be a little low. I guess you know, we'll find out when the survey comes out.
Yeah, and you wonder how many were outside of Wisconsin, let's say. You know, was it 70% Wisconsin folks and 30%, you know, all the other teams? Or, you know, of course we have no way of knowing.
Yeah, there's not. You know, there were. I saw driver's license. I saw car licenses from, you know, all over the country, and there were obviously people wearing, you know, I was just walking around, you know, going into the stadium. There were people wearing, you know, every jersey in the league. So, you know, I'm sure there were a lot of visitors who came in for it. But I, you know, yeah, you're right. You know, who knows whether it was 30-70 or, you know, 20-80. Who knows?
I think it was kind of a nice send off for Packers CEO and President Mark Murphy. I personally like him a lot. I had a chance to spend quite a bit of time with him when I was in Green Bay for an event. And he's just a, to me, a really genuine and nice person. And I was happy. He's retiring in July, so this is his swan song. What was your impression of Mark Murphy?
You know, he was a big mover in getting the draft here. I think he was the one, as much as anybody in that organization, who first grabbed onto the idea and thought it was something that the Packers could do and that Green Bay and Brown County could do. Overall, I mean, look, he's got his detractors. Everybody does. You know, you know, there's things that they could have done better. They've had these great quarterbacks. There is some truth in, you know, you have Favre and Rodgers back to back. Winning two Super Bowls feels a little light because those guys are, you know, first ballot Hall of Famers, and Murphy was in charge for a decent chunk of that.
Yeah.
But they've also won. I looked this up a few weeks ago. I can't remember the exact numbers, but if you go back to when Ron Wolf was hired in '92, they have, it's either the best record or the second best record in football. So that's winning a lot of games, and you're in contention, and so your fans always have a reason to be engaged. And they've he presided over an organization where, they had a Hall of Fame quarterback who said he wanted to keep playing, and they drafted another quarterback anyway. And there's a lot of owners around this league who would not have allowed the Packers to who have not allowed their teams to draft Jordan Love. If they had had Aaron Rodgers as their quarterback, they would have said, no, we're taking a guy who's going to help us now. And Love sat 3 years. And, I think that's kind of one of the Packers' superpowers is they allow for their GM to make the football decisions. And to make a long-term decision like that, you take a lot of criticism from fans, the people who pay the bills. You take a lot of criticism for doing something like that, and it's paid off. It's looking like it's going to pay off, at least fairly well, and maybe better than that. And just like it paid off great with Rodgers, with Favre to Rodgers. So a long way of getting to that. He's presided over a lot of good football and the expansion of all that. So overall, I mean, it's hard, whether you like him or not. I think it's hard to say that, his tenure hasn't been, pretty successful.
Yeah, I would agree. We haven't talked. I mean, I want to go back to the Packers picks for a minute because they did go to defense on their fifth and sixth picks. I think they didn't they use defensive lineman. Who was it? Colin Oliver, somebody like that, from Oklahoma State.
Yeah, he was their fifth round pick, and he's another edge rusher. I think, and what's really interesting with him is, so Brian Gutekunst really likes these edge rushers, these edge guys, ideally to be, 6'5", 265 to 270. That basically describes Rashawn Gary, who was a first round pick a few years ago, Lucas Van Ness, who was a first round pick 2 years ago. That's his prototype for that position. Even when they sign undrafted guys or they draft guys later, they're usually at least, 255 at the kind of at the minimum. And, a lot of them are 260, 265. And he likes to have those big edge guys, playing in Green Bay in the winter, just to hold the edge against the run. If people get hurt, he always says, if you have a small edge rusher and you lose a couple guys, the small edge rusher has to start playing more and on rundowns, and then, you start getting attacked there. And the interesting thing with Oliver is he's 240. That's really small for an edge guy, and it's a concession that they needed a little more speed. At least they wanted take a chance and have at least one speed rusher, for getting after the quarterback. And they basically said this guy, at least early in his career, if he's a good player, will be a designated pass rusher, somebody they'll rotate in there on third and 8 or maybe second and really long. That's a guy who'll be in there in passing downs, and his job will be to get after the quarterback.
Yeah. And they also got George's Warren Brinson of as well. He was pretty late.
Yes, yeah, sixth rounder, I believe, and that's getting later in the draft. Those guys, the failure rate increases each round you move down. But sixth rounders can end up being good player. I mean, as we said, Tom Brady was a sixth rounder.
Yeah.
So, but they lost T.J. Slaton, who was their best, pure run stopping defensive lineman. They let him walk in free agency. So they needed to fill that. This guy isn't as big as Slayton. He's a little better rusher than Slayton was coming out of college. He's not as big and powerful as Slayton, so he's probably not quite the run stopper. But they needed to add to that defensive line room after losing Slayton. So, it's just anybody's guess, one on whether this guy will be, a good enough player to keep around for the, 4 years of his rookie contract, and two, whether he's good enough to, actually help them and be part of the rotation this season.
We had, well, the 7 rounds, we had 8 picks. How did we get eight, wind up with 8 picks? Do you remember that last?
Yeah, so in with free agency, they with the players they lost versus the players they gained, you get. You can get draft picks if you lost more than you gained. Now I've got a, I sorry, I don't know this off the top of my head, Larry, but I can't remember if that's how they got their other seventh rounder, or if it was from a trade last year. It also could be that.
Oh
I'm
yeah.
sorry, I just can't remember off the top of my head right now.
I don't remember either. I was thinking about the Badger football team and the picks, the most of the picks were from former Badgers who had left NIL wise or otherwise.
Yeah, it was, they wanted to make it a state of Wisconsin thing, to appeal to, because I'm sure they knew fans were going to be here from all over the state, so they wanted to appeal to everybody. So yeah, there were a ton of former Badgers up there. Even there was Tim Krumrie, who I think he was a player when I was going to school down in Madison.
I was so upset when the Packers didn't pick him when they had the chance to let him go because I thought he was the best player. And he
Oh,
had,
they should have. He's in the Hall of Fame. That he would have helped them a lot.
I was thinking about other teams. Cleveland. Now you wonder about Cleveland because they're sitting now, if I'm not mistaken, with 5 quarterbacks. If you
Yeah,
add them all up.
you can't take that many into training camp because there's just not enough snaps to go around for all of them. You got to get your starter the majority of the work, and your backup's got to get his share of work too. So I mean, they're for sure going to cut one, and they may even, I wonder if they'll reduce down to three before training camp is over. But yeah, that whole Shedeur Sanders story was really amazing to see him drop from, where a lot of people, I mean, Mel Kiper had him as what, his third best player. And I'm sure, there were teams out there. I'm guessing there were teams out there that, had a first round grade on him, even if they weren't going to pick him. But to see him be available still in the fifth round, that was really interesting. I'll be curious to see if he ends up, if the league is right with their evaluation of him, and that he was drafted where he should have been, or if he ends up being a good player.
You just wonder about his dad and what the maybe the negative impact his dad might have had on the whole the view of him.
Yeah, if you're running a team and you think, well, he's not bad. He's maybe he'll be good, maybe he'll be a starter, but I'm not sold on it. Do you want him on your team? And if your starter's struggling, to have his dad, if his dad ever says anything, it's going to make national news, and he's not afraid to say what he's thinking. There might be some teams that just didn't want to deal with that, especially if you're a coach or a GM who's, you feel like you're a little bit on the hot seat. You wouldn't want to deal with that, and you might think it would be a problem for your locker room too. So I don't doubt for a second that played at least a part in it.
Yeah. Somebody else is wondering, how does character play into who gets drafted or not? How important is it to the Packers to draft players who they think fit their team's culture?
It matters for all teams. It matters for some more than others. My experience observing the Packers is it's through the three GMs, the three main GMs that I've covered, is that it seems to matter a little more with them than the rest of the league. But it's sort of a sliding scale where how good a player you are, they'll put up with more. They'll take higher risks. And then there's two sides of character. There's whether someone's prone to getting in trouble off the field, and there's football character. Is how much do you love the game? How hard do you work? How hard do you practice? Are you a good guy to have around in the locker room? That's all would be grouped into football character, and it seems like that matters quite a bit.
Yeah, I think you're right. I've had occasion to be a professor for some first rounders, and I had I remember fielding calls from the NFL itself about the character of the person because I was their advisor
What
and.
kind of questions would they ask you?
What was he like in the classroom? What was his, what did you observe outside the classroom? How did he relate to other students? Were there issues, with that you saw with respect that he gave to you, to me, or to others? Especially other women in the to women in the classes, things like that.
Was this scouts from teams, or was this somebody from the league office? I'm
League
guessing it was
office,
scouts, right?
league office.
Oh, okay.
I think scouts too on occasion, but I didn't have that many, but the few I had stand out in my mind a bit. So. Those were the kinds of questions. Well, what do you think? Overall, you happy with the end result for the Packers?
Like I said earlier, I learned fairly early on covering this league that to make any judgments just based on name recognition or even, I talked to a handful of scouts about these guys, especially the guys going in the first couple rounds, and you wouldn't believe how the evaluations of a guy, one scout will say one thing and one scout will think almost the exact opposite about the guy. One scout will love a guy, another scout will just be, yeah, I just don't see it with this guy. So I've learned a lot enough to not make any judgments about whether a player is good or not. You can make judgments about did they take a big injury risk with this guy? Is he coming off an injury? Did he have injury problems? Things like that. Those things are open to wondering about as far as I'm concerned. But was it a good draft? Was it not? Who knows?
On that
Not very
note,
satisfying, but
yeah.
that's kind of the way it is.
Pete, thanks a lot for spending time with us today. I really appreciate it. I hope we can do this again down the road. Thanks, Pete.
Yeah, sure, anytime, Larry. Thank you for having me.
Pete Doherty is a great guest to have on the show. He's been covering the Packers for a long, long time and knows a whole lot about what's going on. It's great to have him with us. Coming up, we're going to take a look at marathons. You want to be a marathon runner, or are you one already? You'll have a chance to talk with our expert guest next. I'm Larry Mueller.